Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are deep diving into a topic that almost every single small business owner runs into when they're looking for capital. We're talking about the personal guarantee, the PG. And this isn't just about, you know, signing a contract. It's really about understanding this massive commitment, this bridge between your business goals and, well, your personal financial life. Our mission today is to unpack what this really means, what's at risk, and most importantly, how you can protect yourself. So at its core, a PG is pretty straightforward, right? It's your promise that if your business, your LLC, can't pay its debt, you will.
Yeah.
With your own money.
And that's the key, that last part. I mean, you set up a limited liability company for a reason. You create that legal wall, the corporate veil, to protect your personal wealth from what the business owes.
Right. That's the whole point of an LLC.
Exactly. And what's so fascinating here is that the PG is a tool specifically designed contractually to pierce that veil.
To go right through it.
To go right through it. Think of your LLC as, say, a suit of armor on a financial battlefield. Signing a PG is like inviting the lender to shoot an arrow straight past that armor. It's aimed directly at your personal accounts. We're talking savings, investments, maybe even your home. It takes a corporate problem and makes it a deeply personal one.
Okay, so if the risk is that high, the big question is, why are they everywhere? Why do lenders insist on them? Let's get into the mechanics of it. The sources we looked at show the scale is just huge. I mean, something like 6 out of every 10 small business owners provide a PG to get financing. This is standard operating procedure. It's not the exception.
It absolutely is. And from the lender's perspective, it's all about risk mitigation. For a small business, a startup, cash flow is unpredictable, their history is limited, and the company's assets. Maybe a few computers, some inventory, not much to fall back on.
So the lender wants security.
They want to know the person running the business has skin in the game. The PG gives them real, tangible recourse beyond a few office chairs. It aligns your incentives with theirs.
And if a default happens, because let's be honest, businesses do fail. The exposure is just breathtaking. Lenders go for the liquid assets first, so personal savings, investment portfolios, and sometimes, depending on the state, even parts of retirement accounts.
But it doesn't stop there. Then they look at tangible property, a vacation home, cars, valuable belongings. Now, yes, there are some state and federal exemptions like homestead laws that offer some protection, but the sources are really clear on this. Those protections are limited. For a determined creditor with a valid PG, those laws just slow them down. They don't stop them.
And here's the part that feels so unfair, the stacking of costs. You think you owe the original loan amount, but it gets so much worse.
That is the detail you absolutely have to grasp. You're liable for the principal, yes, but also this whole stack of costs that builds up during a default. That means all the accrued interest, late fees, default penalties, and the lender's legal expenses.
Wait, hold on. So my business fails and now I have to pay my bank's lawyers. That's like pouring salt on a financial wound.
Precisely. You are paying for their attorney, their court costs, and maybe even the collection agency they hire. That stack of costs can quickly grow larger than the original loan itself. It's often what pushes a business owner into personal bankruptcy. You're footing the entire bill for their recovery effort.
It makes sense then that we need to unpack the different kinds of these things. Let's talk about the spectrum of liability because not all PGs are the same and the risk levels are very different. We'll start with the highest risk one, the unlimited personal guarantee. This is, well, it's maximum exposure. You accept full responsibility for the entire debt. No cap, no limit. If you're a sole proprietor, this is often the only deal on the table. The upside, maybe, is you might get a better interest rate or a bigger loan because you're offering total security.
But the risk is infinite. A much better option, if you can negotiate it, is a limited personal guarantee. This puts a clear ceiling on your personal exposure. It could be a specific dollar amount or maybe a percentage of the loan.
And that's more common with multiple owners, right?
Yes, very common. Liability often mirrors ownership. You own 30% of the business, you guarantee 30% of the loan. But here's where you have to read the fine print. You need to look for three terms: joint, several, or joint and several.
Those sound like dense legal terms, but they have huge real-world consequences.
Huge. With joint liability, all the partners have to be pursued together. With several liability, the lender can only come after you for your specific portion. But the one lenders want, the riskiest for you, is joint and several liability.
And what does that mean in practice?
It gives the lender total flexibility. Let's say you and a partner each guarantee 50% of a loan. If your partner vanishes or goes bankrupt, the lender doesn't have to chase them. They can pivot and come after you for the full 100%. You're left on the hook for the entire debt, and then you have to try and sue your partner to get their half back.
That just puts a massive premium on who you go into business with. Okay, finally, let's touch on continuing guarantees. These seem really insidious because they're so open-ended.
Oh, this is where the risk gets amplified in a way people don't see coming. A continuing guarantee covers the loan you're signing for today, and it automatically covers all future borrowing from that same lender without any new paperwork.
So your liability just keeps growing.
It can with every new line of credit. And here's the trap. Imagine you're a partner, you sell your shares and leave the company, but you never got a formal release from that old continuing guarantee. The business could take out a massive new loan years later, and you'd still be fully liable for it, even though you have no involvement. It's a ticking liability time bomb.
That's a huge takeaway. Your liability can outlive your involvement. Which brings us to a critical point. How do you decide if signing is even worth it?
The sources really push for a rigorous two-part assessment, and you have to take off the rose-colored glasses of the entrepreneur. First is a deep business viability assessment. You have to stress test your numbers. What if your biggest client leaves? What if your costs jump 20%? Can the business still make the loan payments under pressure?
It sounds easy to do on paper, but I imagine it's psychologically tough to plan for your own baby to fail.
It's brutal, but it's absolutely essential. And that honesty has to extend to a personal financial capacity evaluation. You need to catalog your personal assets and your personal debts, your mortgage, your savings. How big is your emergency fund? You have disability insurance. You need to know if you can personally survive the worst case scenario.
Now let's shift to the fallout, the collateral damage to your credit. This is where the business's problems bleed directly into your personal life.
Exactly. There's a direct link to your personal credit score. I mean, sure, timely business payments might give you a little boost, but any late payments on that guaranteed loan, it hits your personal credit score immediately. It's treated just like being late on your own credit card.
And if a default happens and they start collections, the damage is severe. We're talking 100 points or more, right?
Yeah.
And if they get a judgment against you, that stays on your credit report for years.
7 to 10 years, typically. It makes getting any future loans, even a car loan, incredibly difficult and expensive. And even without a default, it complicates things. It affects your debt-to-income ratio, your DTI. When you apply for a mortgage, the underwriter has to consider that PG as a potential debt you're responsible for. It can seriously limit your personal borrowing power, even if the business is doing great.
So, given that PGs are often the price of admission for getting capital, the real action is in the negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing that document isn't the end of the conversation. So what strategies can you actually use?
Before you even think about signing, you need professional advice. An attorney for the legal language, a financial advisor to model the risks, an accountant to vet the numbers, that's non-negotiable. Then, in the negotiation itself, a top priority is asset exclusion. You try to get specific personal assets taken off the table. Protecting your primary home is goal number one. Lenders are sometimes willing to bend on this because foreclosing on a primary residence is messy and expensive for them anyway. You also fight to protect retirement accounts like 401ks and any college savings plans.
And if they hand you an unlimited PG, the goal is always to negotiate a cap, to turn it into a limited one.
Always. You can propose a cap as a percentage of the debt, or maybe a formula like 125% of the initial loan amount. It gives the bank a cushion to cover their costs, but protects you from that catastrophic, boundless risk.
Beyond the dollar amount, you should also be fighting for time limits, these sunset provisions.
Right. There are two main ways to do it. A simple calendar-based sunset, where the guarantee just expires on a certain date, assuming you're current on payments.
Right.
Or a performance-based one. The guarantee ends after the business makes, say, 24 or 36 perfect on-time payments in a row. It rewards stability.
We also saw the idea of graduated release provisions, which seems like a really smart way to align everyone's interests.
It's excellent protection. It means as you pay down the loan, the amount of your personal guarantee drops proportionally. The business pays down 25% of the principal. Your personal guarantee amount is cut by 25%. It acknowledges that the bank's risk is going down over time.
And if, after all that planning, trouble still comes, the sources were unanimous. The most critical step is early and honest communication with the lender before you miss a payment.
Proactive communication builds so much credibility. If you see a tough quarter coming, you tell them. That opens the door to negotiate a workout plan, a temporary deferral, maybe interest-only payments. It can stop a technical default from ever happening in the first place.
So what's the big picture here for you, the entrepreneur? It seems PGs are this powerful, almost unavoidable tool for getting the capital you need to grow. But you have to balance that business optimism with some really conservative personal risk management. You have to be willing to bet on yourself, but negotiate fiercely over the size of that bet.
And knowledge is everything here. Looking forward, we might see new technology or financing models, like revenue-based financing, that rely less on PGs. But for now, they are a fundamental reality. So I'll leave you with a final thought to consider. Since we know a PG can stick with you even after you leave a business, especially a continuing guarantee, how should a business with multiple owners structure its initial guarantee from day one? How do you ensure that when one partner exits, their portion of the guarantee is automatically and formally released? You want to prevent a former owner from being on the hook for debts taken on long after they're gone. That is a level of protection you have to think about and negotiate right at the very beginning.